Now we're holding on page Yud Tes in Gittin, three lines from the bottom, near the beginning of Ois Memches. We learned yesterday about that there were seven dynasties, one after the other, in the kingdom of the Aseres HaShevatim that worshipped Avodah Zarah, and eventually, therefore, that kingdom was destroyed, and the Aseres HaShevatim were taken into Golos. So now, continuing on that topic. Now the last king, the last, as the Gemara had called it, Beis Din, was named Hoshea ben Ela. By the way, not to be confused with the Novi Hoshea, of course. So Omalei Rav Kahana Rav Asi l'Rav. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi asked Rav about this last king, Hoshea ben Ela. About him, there's an expression in the pasuk, Vayasarab ve'eni Hashem rak loy k'malcha Yisrael. He did what was evil in Hashem's eyes, but not like the kings of Yisrael. So he was bad, but not as bad as the previous Malcha Yisrael. Uchtiv, but then the next pasuk says, Olav Shaman Esav Chola, that Shaman Esav, the king of Asher, came up against him and conquered him and made him his vassal and eventually exiled him and so forth. Shaman Esther on the surface is the name of a different king of Asher. The Gemara actually in Sanhedrin explains that a number of the names of the kings of Asher that are mentioned in the various psukim are all different names for Sancheiriv. That might mean literally, or it might mean that they're all the same type of person, and therefore they can all be described as the same person. And Das Sofrim, I think, is an explanation that it means that Sancheiriv was kind of the moving force behind all of them. In particular, the idea, the policy that we find the kings of Asher had a policy that whenever they conquered a place, they would deport the people from there to someplace else, and then bring in other people to colonize the area. We find they did that with the Aseres HaShevatim. In general, we have the concept in Halacha that Sancheiriv Bilbul as Kol HaUmos. So he mixed them all up so that the various restrictions that we have in the Torah and gave him from certain nations intermarrying into the Jewish people basically don't apply anymore. So the idea would be that even if there were separate kings, Shalmaneser being one and Tiglath-Pileser being another and so on and so forth, Sancheiriv would have been the one giving them this idea to do this policy, and therefore they can all be thought of as nicknames of Sancheiriv. Be that as it may, the point of the question is that why, if Hoshea was not as bad as the previous kings, why Dafka is he the one being conquered and eventually arrested and exiled by Shalman Esser, by the kings of Asher? So Rav answers them like this. Back when Yerovam set up his Egle HaZahav, he wanted to force that the Jews are going to go there to worship rather than go to the Beis Mikdash. The whole reason he set up the Egle HaZahav in the first place, the Pesukim described, the Gemara in Sanhedrin goes into more detail about it, that he was afraid that if they come to Yerushalayim and they see Rechavam and the Beis Mikdash, in particular the Gemara points out that Rechavam is allowed to sit in the Azara, it's a unique privilege given to the kings from Beis David, whereas Yerovam would have to be standing, then everybody's going to think that Rechavam is the legitimate king of the whole Jewish people, and he, Yerovam, is not, and because of that is why he set up the Egle HaZahav. So part of his strategy then was also he worked hard to convince people to go to the Egle HaZahav, but for those who weren't going to be convinced, he set up guards on the roads to prevent people from going. We find a reference in the Novi Hoshea that they would actually kill people who were trying to go. The Gemara in Tainus mentions there were certain people who managed to find tricks to get around the guards. It mentions that our son of Yerovam himself, named Avia, at one point deserted his guard post to go on Aliyah L'Regel. Basically, all that time, ever since the time of Yerovam, there had been guards on the roads, at least at the time of Aliyah L'Regel, to prevent people from going. So Shahushiv Yerovam al Adrachim, that Yerovam had set up on the roads to prevent people from being oil l'regel. Kadesh lo yalu l'Yisrael l'regel, so the Jewish people don't go up to the Beis Mikdash for the Shalosh Regalim. Bo Hosheo Bithlon. Now Hosheo ben Ela, this last king, took away those guards. Now he says people are free to go to Yerushalayim. But Afal Pikein like Olo Yisrael L'Regel. Nevertheless, Jews were not Olo L'Regel because they've gotten used to. By now, it's over 200 years of Malchus Yisrael, and they were already used to not going to the Beis Mikdash. You find, even by the way, in Divrei Yomim, there's Psukim over there that describe Chizkiyahu, who was the king of, who Chizkiyahu became the king of Yehuda a few years after Hoshea became the king of the Aseres HaShevatim. Hezekiah right away wanted to have a massive gathering for Pesach in Yerushalayim, and he sends messengers throughout the kingdom of the Aseret HaShevatim inviting people to come, and the Pesach says there were many places where they were going where the people were laughing at them and mocking them. Some people, the Pesach describes, there were people from a number of the Shevatim who did come, but unfortunately a lot of the people were not receptive. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so now Hashem says, Oysen Shonim Shalei Oli Yisrael L'Regel, in return for those years that they're not being Oli L'Regel, now there's nobody preventing them and they're still not going, Yehuchu Bashivya, now for that they should go into captivity. So in other words, up until now, there wasn't going to be, the Aseret HaShevatim weren't going to be taken into Golos because they'd have an excuse. We would have liked to be Oli L'Regel, but the kings are preventing us. But now that the king's not preventing them and they're not going, then Hashem holds it against them. Tanit Ve'eliyahu phrases it that Hoshea took the koiler, he took like the chains that were on the necks of the kings and put them on the neck of the Jewish people. Like now it's their fault, they're the ones who are held at fault for not going. Ion Yaakov and a few of the other Mephoshim point out, you know, like this, we also say, the Gemara tells us in Tainus that the day that Heshev ben Ela got rid of those guard posts was Tu B'Av, and it's one of the things that we celebrate on that day, on Chamish HaAsar B'Av, is that he took away those guard posts. Here we're saying, on the other hand, that it was the catalyst for the Golos. The answer is it's both, really. I mean, it meant that now the Tzaddikim and the Chachmei Ador are able to go on Aliyah L'Regel without being prevented and without having to risk their lives to do it. But unfortunately, we're saying that there were some people who didn't take advantage of it, and therefore they're held responsible. So it's really both. Now, why would we say that not being Aliyah L'Regel should result in such a severe punishment as Golos? There's a few different explanations that Mephoshim give. Ben Yehoyada says a point basically like this, you had Tzaddikim in that time, and those schus ought to have protected the people, but because they weren't Ola L'Regel, now when they had the chance, apparently he learns the Ion Yaakov had said that the Tzaddikim did take advantage of it and were Ola L'Regel, apparently Ben Yehoyada is learning that not all of them did, so now those schus can no longer protect the people. Again, until now, they would have had a built-in excuse, but now they don't have that anymore. Avas Esan on the side over here brings from a different point that when it comes to Aliyah L'Regel, the expression of the pasuk is that three times a year you should come El Pnei Ha'Odain Hashem to the presence of the Master Hashem. And there's a medrash that says that whenever Hashem is called Odain, it means that Hashem is showing that he's the master, that he's the landlord of the land, and he's deciding who gets to live there versus who gets kicked out. Thus, we find, for example, when the Jewish people cross the Yarden and are coming to conquer Eretz Yisrael, then the Oren over there is described as Aroin HaBris Adoin Kol HaOretz, the Oren of the covenant of the master, of the landlord of the land. Hashem is exercising his rights as the landlord and kicking out the seven nations and replacing them with us. So now, if they're not Ola L'Regel, then therefore, so now Hashem, again, in his capacity as Adoin, they're not coming up. Pnei HaOdon Hashem, so therefore Hashem, in his capacity as Adoin, is saying they don't belong there anymore. Anyway, so that's the explanation why it is that so Hoshea was not as bad, and yet in his times the Golos came, that's why. Maharsha points out the interesting nuance in it is that therefore the Pasuk describes Hoshea as being not as bad, Rak Loi Kamalcha Yisrael, meaning he worshipped Avodah Zarah, but in the way that the Malcha Yehuda did. We find the number of Malcha Yehuda over the centuries who worshipped Avodah Zarah. But none of them prevented the people from being Ola L'Regel. Why would they? The Beth Mikdash is in their territory. They want people to go there. So therefore, Hoshea is in a way like them. So therefore, he can be described as Loi Kamalcha Yisrael, but rather he's like the wicked kings of Yehuda. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omer of Chista Omer Ma'okva, Va'amila Omer of Chista Omer of Yirmiya, Dorash Meremer. Meremer gave the following Dorasha. My dichti, what does it mean, a pasuk, Daniel, when he's davening for the Golos to be over, we have a number of psukim from his tefillah that we say on Mondays and Thursdays, and in Slichas, Va'at Hashem Alekeinu Asher Etzeses, Hamcha Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, Hashem Kechol Tzidkasecha, Hate Elekai Oznecho Roshma, etc., is a collection of psukim from this tefillah of his. So he says there, Vayishkoi Hashem Alara, Hashem was quick with the evil. Hashem brought it about quickly by Vi'eholeinu, and he brought the evil, the Golos and the Churban on us. Ki tzadik Hashem alekeinu, because Hashem our God is righteous. What does that mean? Mishum de tzadik Hashem alekeinu, vayishkad Hashem alara, vayvi'eholeinu. How does that fit together? Because Hashem is a tzadik, therefore he brought the evil and the punishment on us faster. Ella, so Marema Darshan, Tzdaka Osa, Kodesh Baruch Hu, in Yisrael, Hashem did a Tzdaka with the Jewish people, Shehegla Golos Tzidkiyahu, Vadain Golos Yechon Yekayemes. That Hashem brought about the Golos of Tzidkiyahu while the Golos of Yechonia were still there in Babel. Namely, 11 years before the Churban, Yechonia was taken into Golos, together with the Choresh V'Hamaskir, which the Gemara is going to define in the next couple of lines, are the great Talmid Chachamim of that period. So they were all taken into Babel in Golos 11 years before the Churban. Now, then Tzidkiyahu becomes king, and then eventually he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, and eventually Nebuchadnezzar came and conquered and destroyed Yerushalayim and so forth. The point is, there were only 11 years between those. So therefore, the Tzaddikim and the Chachamim, who had been taken into Babel 11 years earlier, were still very much alive and flourishing, and therefore they were able to provide a solid infrastructure of Torah now when the new people are coming. Like this, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, for example, that the Marsha refers to it over here. The subjects of, now you have like this, before Yechonia, there was Yehoyakim, Yechonia's father, who was king for 11 years. He was a really vile Rasha. The Gemara in Sanhedrin mentions really disgusting things that he did. You also have the Novi Yumia says some harsh divorce against him for that. Anyway, but his subjects were by and large tzaddikim. They included the Choresh V'Hamaskir, these great Talmid Chachamim and tzaddikim, which, by the way, that group includes people like Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, it includes Mordechai, it includes, and so on and so forth. It includes Yechezkel, etc. So now, on the other hand, though, the Gemara continues to say over there in Sanhedrin, once they were taken into Golos, the bulk of the people who were left in Eretz Yisrael were the Rishoyim. So Tzidkiyahu himself, the Gemara says there, was actually a tzaddik in his personal life, but his subjects were Rishoyim. Unfortunately, he also didn't live up to what he needed to. He didn't rein them in, and he didn't control what they're doing. We find even in Pesukim that Tzidkiyahu was actually afraid of the people around him, of their reactions and what they're going to do and so forth, and he doesn't stand up to them like the way he should have as a king. Anyway, the point is that if it had been a few decades after Golos Yechonia until Golos Tzidkiyahu, then by the time these Rishoyim and Poshita people from Eretz Yisrael came to Babel, the old generation of the Choresh V'Hamaskir would have long since passed away, or at least wouldn't be as active, and therefore you wouldn't have a solid infrastructure of Torah set up for them. But now, Hashem made that it's only 11 years apart, so therefore you have that. So that's the tzaddik Hashem alakenu, that by Yishkad Hashem al Ra, that Hashem brought the ultimate evil, the churban and the golos and the final golos, only 11 years after the previous one, so that they're still active, and that way you had that Babel became and remained a mokum Torah. What do we mean? The pasuk says, in the connection with the Golos of Yechonia, the Chorosh and the Masker were 1,000 who were taken into Golos. Now, the simple meaning of Chorosh V'Hamaskir, Chorosh would mean craftsmen, like you have Chorosh Evan and Bacharoshes Evan, Bacharoshes 8, in connection with the Mishkan, and Masker literally would mean locksmiths. But the Gemara darshens it. The Gemara darshens it that it actually means the great Talmid Chachamim. One thing is, Marsha points out, because when the pasuk mentions them, when the pasuk mentions 1,000 of them, it continues Hakol Giborim Osei Milchama. They were all mighty men who know how to fight wars. Now, if they're being taken in chains to Babel, you can't very well call them mighty men. Where's their might? Therefore, the Gemara necessarily understands that it means that their might was in Torah, and that's not affected by them being taken and shackled and brought in Golos. So why are they called Chorosh and Masker? Chorosh, they're called Chorosh, which in the Lashon Cheresh, as in death. When they open their mouths to speak, everybody else becomes like mutes, unable to speak, meaning because they're such great chachamim that nobody has any ability to say anything against what they're saying. Masker, and they're called masker in the sense, kivin shesogrin, when they close up something, when they're closed up on something, shuven and poskin, nobody else is going to be able to open it again. Meaning, Rashi says, it means when they say, for example, if there's a halacha that they don't know, then nobody else is going to be able to find an answer to that. Elsewhere, a different explanation is that it means that if they conclude something, they say, this is the bottom line, then nobody else is going to have the ability to reopen the discussion, because there was such outstanding chachamim that they have the final word on it. As far as the first possibility, by the way, that if they don't know what to answer, then nobody else can reopen it, they say something similar about Rabbi Akiva Eger. You look in Gilui Nashas throughout Shas, you'll often find that he finishes off sometimes with Tzorach Iyun or Tzorach Iyun Tzas, or even Tzorach Iyun Godol. Once in a while, you'll even have the expression Vashem Yor Einai, may Hashem enlighten my eyes. And they say in the Lomdisha circles in the advanced yeshivas. These are grades of things. That Tzorach Iyun Gadol is obviously a much greater naughtier problem than a Tzorach Iyun, but in any case, that all of them, there's really, the Takeh is no solution. If Rabbi Akiva Eger couldn't find any solution for them, then yeah, we haven't got a hope of it. So that in that sense, then, he's similar to the Chorosh over here. So therefore, over Kama Elaf, and how many were they? 1,000. There's actually a different pasuk that speaks of 10,000 of them. So there would have been different levels of them. You have the greatest are 1,000, and then you have others who are not as great, but still in that league. That was the chesed that Hashem brought about, that the later golos came there when those earlier ones were still active. Ula says a different explanation of the Vayishked Hashem al Ra. In what did Daniel mean? That Hashem was a tzaddik in bringing the evil faster. Shehiktim shnei shonim levinei shantem. Namely, that Hashem brought the Golus 2 years before Vinei Shantem. The Pasuk says, and we learned the Pasuk yesterday, Kisolet bonim of nevonim, Vinei Shantem. You're going to have children and descendants, and Vinei Shantem, and you're going to get old in Eretz Yisrael, and then eventually the Pasuk describes you're going to end up worshipping Avodah Zarah, So the gematria of the word Vinei Shantem is 852. So in other words, there was a remez in it that there's going to be 852 years that the Jewish people are going to be in Eretz Yisrael before their time is up and it's time for the Golos. Now, in actuality, in the event, there were only 850 years. Because we have, to summarize it, you have 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the first Beis Hamikdash was built. Since they had 40 years in the desert, it means it's full 40 years from when they entered Eretz Yisrael until Shlomo started building the first Beis Hamikdash. The first Beis Hamikdash stood for 410 years. 440 plus 410 is 850. So now, the point is, in other words, that Hashem brought the Golos 2 years before that time of Vnei Shantem would be up. Because otherwise, since the pasuk continues, Moshe says, I'm telling you today that you're going to be completely destroyed, so by bringing it 2 years earlier, then Hashem doesn't have to do the Oved Tevedun. So that was the chesed, that Hashem brought it 2 years early. Now why 2 years early? Then why not 1 year? So there's an interesting idea brought there's a sefer from a Talmud of the Trumas Hadeshen called Leket Yosher, where he goes and collects various vertlach and various minhogim and whatever of his rebbe. It's an interesting sefer from which we learn a lot of minhogim and a lot of interesting divrei Torah and all. He says, you know, in gematria we usually say we often have that you can have imakoylo, but sometimes you have two things are considered equal in gematria, even if there's a difference of one between them, because the one represents the koil, represents the word or the phrase as a whole. Well, here, and it's brought, for example, that there's a remez to that, and the fact that Yaakov says, Ephraim u'Menashe k'Ruven v'Shimon yuli. Ephraim u'Menashe is gematria 726. Ruven v'Shimon is gematria 725. So you see that there's a difference of one, and so you see that a difference of one is acceptable. So here, the Leket Yosher brings from his Rebbe, same thing over here. If it were to be a difference of 1 year, then he would say, well, that doesn't mean anything. One is imakolol. So 851 is tantamount to 852. But therefore, you have to have a 2 year difference because two already is not an acceptable deviation in gematria. So the Pnei Yeshua brings a very interesting point in this connection. He says, you know, like this we usually say, based on the expression in Tillim, ki elof shanim beinecha ki yom esmol, we usually say that a day of Hashem is 1,000 of our years. Therefore, for example, we talk about the 6,000 years of the world being divided and be corresponding to the 6 days of Ma'aseh Bereishis. He brings an interesting idea, though, that instead of it being 100, it's actually 930 years. Why? Because we know Adam lived to 930. Now, the usual thing we say is that Adam was supposed to live 1,000 years, and they get 70 years away to David HaMelech, but still, the Pnei Yeshua learns, he says that you can say that a day of Hashem is 930 years. If you divide that into 24 hours, then it comes out the equivalent of an hour is a little under 39 years. 2 hours, therefore, comes out to 78 years, approximately, 77 and a half, whatever. Now, he brings that when Yaakov came to Hara Maria, and he davened over there, and then he wanted to continue on, and Hashem says, as Rashi brings on the Pasuk, once the tzaddik is here, I wanted to stay overnight, so therefore Hashem made the sun set 2 hours early. So the Pnei Yeshua calculates, if you go by that logic, it means Hashem was hinting to Yaakov that the sun of his descendants is going to set instead of after a full day of Hashem, so to speak, which is 930 years, 2 hours short of that. So 2 hours, by that calculation, is 78 years, 930 minus 78 equals 852. Therefore, that's where we got the figure 852 over here, and now, so that was what was intended, but instead now we're saying Hashem brought it 2 years earlier than that in order that there shouldn't be the Ovid Tevedrin. The Pnei Yeshua, by the way, mentions after he brings this word, he says, after I died doushing this in public and I wrote it down over here later on, he says, I found it in a different sefer. Oh. So basically, he says, Baruch Shekivanti, or words to that effect, but I'm still going to continue writing it as my own word because I came up with it independently of seeing it in that sefer. Maybe we're born under the same mazel or something, he says, but yeah. Okay, so there we get the figure 852, but again, the chesed was that Hashem brought the Golas 2 years earlier than that. So the Gemara continues, Amar of Acha Bayakov Shmamina, we see from that then, since the Pasuk is saying, Ki Oved Tevedrun Maher, and then as we see that Hashem was planning for it to be 852 years, Shmamina Mehera Demore Alma Tmanya Meya Vachamshin Vatautihu, we see that when Hashem describes something coming quickly, it can be 852 years. Because that's what we're saying, that Hashem had planned for 852 years. The Chassam Sofer, by the way, has a really nice moshul to explain what it means. So why Hashem bringing it early is a chesed, as Daniel is saying, tzaddik Hashem. Basically, the moshul is that you have a chos and kala that are engaged to be married, and there's supposed to be a certain time by which the wedding is supposed to take place. And of course, during that time, the kala is supposed to be getting together everything that she needs. Meanwhile, this kala is not doing what she's supposed to, and she's foiling zich and not putting together what she needs to. So comes time, and the chosin realizes, the date of the wedding is approaching, and she's not ready yet. So what does he do? He leaves town. He leaves town. That way he can make it seem, it's a chesed to her, that way he can make it seem when her friends are going to ask her, wait, why didn't you get married yet? Well, it's not my fault. My chosin left town. So the same way, the Ebrister did a chesed, instead of outright going and saying, you know what, you guys are guilty. So instead, the Ebrister, so to speak, withdraws, and fine, eventually there will be the wedding, but there's going to have to be a delay until we're ready with Ma'aseinu V'Avodaseinu. So we see that Mehera is 852. Tosfos brings up the question that, what do you mean though? The Pasuk is saying, Kisolad Bonim of Nevonim, you're going to have children, and Eshantem Aretz, Vishchatem, and you're going to do evil, Vasisim Pesel, Tmonas Kerl, then he gabti lachem ayim, ki obed tevedun, then I'm telling you that you're going to quickly be lost from Eretz Yisrael. Now the question is though, so that would work if they were serving Avodah Zarah for the entire 852 years, but were they? Maybe not. Maybe they're only serving Avodah Zarah for some short amount of time before the Churban. So in that case, Mehera, or Maher in the Pasuk, would be much less than that. That's Tosfos' first question. The second question they bring from Rabbeinu Ochanan, that maybe what it means is, Ki Oved Tevedun Maher, means that it'll be very soon after Vnei Shantem. So in that case, Hashem's Maher would be similar to our Maher right away. 852 years pass, they worship Avodah Zarah, and then right away, that's it, after the 852 years, they're gone. So Tosfos answers the first question by saying that the fact is that they were worshiping Avodah Zarah from the beginning, right away, even when they crossed the Yamsuf, they had Pesel Micha with them. So therefore, we can well say that for the entire 850 years from when they came into Eretz Yisrael, they already had Avodah Zarah with them, and they never fully gave it up. A number of the Mephoshim point out then that Rashi is Tosfos has only answered the first question, but why they haven't really addressed the second question. The first question of what makes us say that during that entire 850 years they're serving Avodah Zarah, but Tosfos has left open the second question. How do we know that Oved Tevedun Maher may mean right after the 852 years, then there's going to be a Maher? So how can we say that the Mehera is 852? And the Mephoshim give a variety of explanations. Among them is that the Mehera that Rabbi Abba Yaakov is referring to is not the Maher from this pasuk, but rather in Krishma, Vavad to Meher, Me'al Aras HaTorva, and there it doesn't say anything about Vene Shantem, so therefore we have reason to say that it means the entire period when they were worshipping Avodah Zarah, which as Tosfos was saying was the 850 years, and different other possibilities that Mephoshim bring. The Pnei Yoshua explains that actually really Tosfos's questions is the second one kind of depends on the first one. Were they worshipping Avodah Zarah that whole time? The Imtim Tzolomah that you were, then how are you going to understand the Mehera? But once we, or if you Imtim Tzolomah that they weren't, then how are you going to understand the Mehera? Once Tosfos establishes that they were worshipping Avodah Zarah the whole time, because to begin with they had Pesel Micha, then the Tosfos said, then there's no room really for Tosfos' second question. Pnei Yeshua also says, though, it's a little difficult to understand. I mean, at least during the times of Yeshua, for example, it says they worshipped Hashem and implying that they weren't worshipping Avodah Zarah. And during the times of Shmuel and of the various righteous kings and so forth, it's a little hard to say that literally they were worshipping Avodah Zarah the whole time. But, so he doesn't elaborate on that. But maybe, I guess, given that Tosfos is saying to begin with, they had Pesel Micha, that means there's like some trace of it left, at least in their minds. And maybe they're not actually worshipping Avodah Zarah in that time, but they haven't completely eradicated it from their minds, and therefore it resurfaces again and again throughout that period. One thing is, then it means that when Hashem says that Mehera, very soon, there's going to be the Gola, then we should realize Hashem has his own timetable, which is a lot different than ours. Further on, the Gemara talks about, you have a concept called get me'usa. You can have where a court forces a person to give a get. So the Mishnah establishes that if a Jewish Beis Din does that, then that's fine. But if a Goyish court, Lahavdil, does that, then it's no good. Unless the Mishnah goes on to say, and this is brought lahalacha, if a Jewish Beis Din uses the Goyish courts as their enforcement arm, so basically the Beis Din is paskin that this guy has to give a get, but they don't have the power to compel him, and therefore they're telling the Goyish courts to use their police power to do that, then that would be valid. This whole thing of get me'usa is an extremely complicated area of halacha. And it comes nowadays, they have all these ideas, for example, of prenuptial agreements and all kinds of things like that, to make it in order to avoid the problem of agunis. And a lot of them run into the problem that you have the issue of get me'usa, where if it's not done properly, then it's going to be possible. In that connection also, we have the famous thing that Rambam writes, which they have brought innumerable times, that if a get is supposed to be given with the rotzen of the husband, how can it be ma'usa in the first place? And the Rambam explains famously that every yid deep down wants to do what the Eibishter wants, and therefore, but his yetzahara is getting the better of him, and therefore when Beis Din compels him, then it's just removing that onus of his yetzahara and allowing his real rotzen to come through. Anyway, in that connection, the Gemara mentions, the Gemara tells that one time Rabbi Yosef and his Beis Din were forcing, where they would regularly force people to give gittin when they were required to api halacha and they weren't. We have to realize, by the way, it's not so simple in itself, because there are certain grounds in halacha for which a woman can demand a get. Not a lot of them. Nowadays, sometimes you have cases where a woman demands a get where there's not necessarily enough basis in halacha for the husband to be able to be required to give one. That's a whole other matter, which unfortunately keeps on surfacing all the time. Anyway. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yosef and his Beis Din were doing that. They were forcing people to give gittin when halacha said they needed to. But Abaya asks him, how could you do that given that you and your Beis Din do not have smicha? The Chacham smicha could be given only in Eretz Yisrael, and the Chacham Mababel didn't have smicha. We mean the original smicha ish mipiyish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Abaya brings in that connection the following brisa. Tanya hoyer Rabbi Tarfon Omer kol mokam shata motzi igurios shel ovde kachavim. When first of all, whenever you find gatherings of goyim, igurios, it actually explains, comes from a word that means gatherings. So, afapisha dinayim to dinay Yisrael, even if they judge in a particular case, exactly like the way a Jewish Beis Din judges, iyatarashoyli zokek lahem, you're not allowed to get involved with them, you're not allowed to go take a case in front of the Goyish courts. Shenema, as the positive says, the Eila Mishpotim asher tasim lifnehem. The positive says, these are the judgments that you should place before them, meaning lifnehem, below lifnei ovde kachavim. It means before them and not before Goyim. How does lifnehem mean davka in front of Jews? Rashi explains because by Matan Torah, who went up with Moshe partway up, they went partway up Har Sinai, is the Skenim, the seven of Ayal, Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, V'shivim, Mizikne, Yisrael. And now, Rashi explains, even though that's described only at the end of Parashas Mishpatim, and the words Ve'eva Mishpatim, Asher Tosim Lefneim, are the beginning of that parasha, nevertheless, chronologically, the order was the end of Mishpatim, and then Ve'eva Mishpatim, Asher Tosim Lefneim, because those events at the end of Mishpatim actually took place during the couple of days leading up to Matan Torah, and Matan Torah itself is supplement the story in Parashas Yisrael, and then after that Hashem is starting to tell Moshe the Mishpatim beginning with the beginning of Parashas Mishpatim. So therefore, chronologically, the Skenim comes before Asher Tosim Lefneim. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos, not here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos in the Gemara, doesn't like that explanation and says a different explanation. Throughout Parashas Mishpatim, here and there, it mentions that you bring a case in front of Elikim. And the Gemara explains in Elikim, the powerful ones, like Elikim Nitzavad Eskel, because of Elikim Yishvot. And so the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin that Elikim means Dayonim with the original Smicha Ishmi Piyish. So now, therefore, when it says over and over in the parasha Elikim, and now it says Ashatosim Lefnei, at the beginning of the parasha, Ashatosim Lefnei Hem, before who? Before the Elikim who are mentioned further in the parasha. That would also fit, by the way, with the Ramban holds, that the Ramban holds that actually the entire Parashas Mishpatim was actually said before Matan Torah. He learns that the Torah over there is written. Rashi is learning that things are out of chronological order. You have Parshas Yisroel describing the Aseres, describing Matan Torah and the Aseres Adibris. Then you have Parshas Mishpatim. Then at the end of the parasha, you have the events before Matan Torah. And Rashi learns that it's out of order. The Ramban holds it's actually in order, and that when it says when Moshe read the Sefer Adbris to the Jewish people, it includes all the topics of Parshas Mishpatim. In any case. So therefore, when it says Ve'elam Mishpatim, Asher Tosim Lefnehem means not before Goyim. Rashi points out on the pasuk that a person brings a case in front of Goyim, then he's demeaning the Torah, making it as though it's no more important than Lahavdil the Goyish laws, and he's honoring the Goyim and their Getchkas. Lahalocha, you have a person there. Lahalocha, you have if a person is not able to get recourse through a Beistin, then he gets permission from the Beistin and goes to Goyish court. Famously, for example, that happened in the Sforim case. They tried to go to Beistin, and the Rebbe's nephew over there refused to go to Beistin, and therefore they wound up having to go to secular court. You have, unfortunately, mice and b'chol yom that such things happen, because today's batidinim don't have, for the most part, enforcement powers. Anyway, but dover achar, and then another explanation, lefneim, below lefnei hediotis, another explanation of lefneihem means daske in front of batidinim, who have smicha, and not in front of hediotis. So Abaya is asking Rabbi Yosef, given that, then how are you and your Beistin able to be forcing people to give gittin? And the Gemara goes on to explain, Rabbi Yosef says basically that we, the Bote Dinim, who don't have smicha, are acting as the shluchim of the Bote Dinim in Eretz Yisrael who do. Now, the Gemara mentions it here in Gittin, it mentions also in Sanhedrin, that's the basis of how Bote Dinim nowadays are able to function. And Dinim Mamanus is basically that they were given reshus by the ancient Bote Dinim that did have smicha, the smicha ishmi piyish, that in future generations they can judge Dinim Mominus, but only certain kinds of Dinim Mominus. It talks about the details in these respective Gemaras and in Choshen Mishpat, what cases are and aren't within the jurisdiction of today's Bote Dinim. When we say every day in davening, Ashiva Shetena Kvarishona, V'yatena Kvarchila, this includes that we want back the original Shoftim and the original Yoritzim with Smicha, so that we're able to fully be able to deal with all kinds of cases of Dinim Mominus and Halacha, and not just the limited ones that we can nowadays. Further on, Mishnah talks about cases where there's a rumor in town that a woman has been divorced, or a rumor in town that a woman has been mekudesh. And when we say when we do pay attention to such rumors, and when we do not, the Gemara has a whole sugya about that. So in the course of that sugya, the Gemara mentions the following point: Ochla b'shuk, if a woman eats in the street. Girgura, which is a pretty sticky thing to do. B'chol, the Gemara mentions in Kedushin that any person eats in the street. But for a woman, apparently it's even more so. It's not a sneer sticky thing to do. Girgura b'shuk, or if she walks around in the street with her head and neck held high, like in order to draw attention to her appearance, hey nikavashuk, or if she nurses her baby in the street, So all of those are pretty sticky things. So Bekulan, Rameyo Oimatetse, in all those cases, Rameyo would say she has to get divorced. Tosfos discusses over here, and other Rishonim discuss, are we talking about that she's already married? Tosfos learns, we're not talking about that she's already married, and now we're going to force her husband to divorce her. We're talking about that she's not yet married, and there's a coil, the rumor is going around that she's doing these kinds of things. Now she wants to marry a Kohen. The concern is, is she maybe a Zoyna? Although Rishonim learn that it may mean that it could conceivably mean even while she's married. In any case, so Rameir says Taitse. Rabbi Akiva says no. Just that there are rumors about that is not enough. Ad sheyisu v'yitnuma moizris v'alavona. It has to be that the women who spin in the moonlight, women would get together after dark and sit together in like sewing circles or whatever and spin wool or linen together and talk. And talk about the news of what's going on in town, Balavana, under the moonlight, and they would gather together in groups, first of all, for the social company, but also for safety's sake. So then, when those women are talking about and then discussing about the rumors of what's going on with her, then Rabbi Akiva says that's a stronger reason to say that those rumors have some basis. But if you some have rumors that are going around, that's not necessarily enough to ask her to her husband or to her future husband, as the case may be. This point about Moses Falavana is also mentioned in Sota, when we're learning Sota now doing Sfira, we're going to be getting to it in a couple of weeks, where you have the same kind of thing. If the woman is suspected of being unfaithful to her husband, and then at what point do we say that there's enough evidence that now you can't even have her drink Mei Sota, because there's enough circumstantial evidence that she was Mizana. And one opinion is, again, when there's Moses Falavana, when these women who are spinning by moonlight are chatting about her. Anyway, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says to Rabbi Akiva, how could you say that the rumors of these women who are sitting and spinning is going to be enough to answer her, even Cain, if you're going to do like that, lo hinachta basla Avraham Avinu sheyeshevas tachas baila. You're not going to leave a single daughter of Avraham Avinu, any Jewish woman, who's going to be able to remain married to her husband, because people often have enemies. So a woman's enemies are going to go and start spreading rumors about her, and then she's going to be also to her husband. Or according to Tosfos that we're talking about, where this is before she's getting married, and the question is whether she can marry a Kohen. So what's going to happen? She's going to marry a Kohen. Afterwards, we're going to say, well, these rumors were going around before she got married. Therefore, that might be reason enough to consider her, that it turns out that she may have been a Zoyna and that her husband would divorce her. Poor guy. How could he have known? He didn't know what kind of rumors that are going around among the women. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan Nuri says, no, rumors are not enough. The Pasuk says that her husband divorces his wife when he finds in her Ervas Dover. So the next Mishnah, which we'll take up tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, talks about that you have Machloikas B'Shama B'Shilol, whether we can divorce her only because of Dvar Erva, or because of other factors as well. But even if we go like B'Shilol, that it means Ervas Dover, means either Erva or Dover, then at least there has to be some solid basis for it. Not just women's rumors. And the Torah also says that in order to establish something firmly, you need two or three edim. To malahalam dover barer, afkan dover barer. Just like over there, it means you have to have a clear thing. You can't have you can't have one aid, and you can't have circumstantial evidence or hearsay evidence or whatever. You need something solid. Afkan dover barer. The same way over here, you have to have something clear, and not just that there are women who are spreading rumors and then talking about her and so forth. So the reason why this is brought in En Yaakov, the Pashtus, is first of all, we see how careful Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is for the honor of Jewish women. We don't just want them to be rejected by their husbands just because of rumors, but b'chlal, we should realize that some rumors going around is not really enough of a basis to establish anything. You need something more solid than that. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Of Dalad Nissen. At one point, the Rav Hager, the Zablatover Rebbe, was by our Rebbe. And the Rebbe told him something that it says in Shari Tshuva from the middle of the Rebbe, that the Chevle Mashiach are over. And it's already the time is Azman Grama for good news. This is actually, it wasn't by him in person. This is, This was a letter. This Zablatover Rebbe had written a letter to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe replied, I guess the content of the letter was to ask what's going to be with Chevle Mashiach, and the Rebbe replies to him that at this point, the Mitzvah Rebbe says, Chevle Mashiach are over, and it's already Azman Gromah for good news. And the Rebbe finishes off, Asker Al Tziyun, I'll mention what you said by the Tziyun of the Friedrich Rebbe. So now, a makurav of the makurav of this Rebbe, Moshe Langer, told the Rebbe in the name of that Zablatova Rebbe that when he received that answer, that Tamu Chevle Mashiach, he wants it to not just be in writing, he wants it to be by Rosh, it should be felt as well. And the Rebbe answers this, Moshe Langer, it's not just a feeling, it's a reality. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Motzei Shabbos and halachas of Havdalah, comes Ben Ashmoshes, meaning when it comes to Shkia, you're not allowed to eat or drink anything or even just taste something except for water until you make Havdalah. This would apply even if you said Atachon Antonu. Now, that's if you're starting to eat something now. You were eating Shalosh Shodes and you began it before Shkia, then you're allowed to continue even into the night because you began Beheter. You'd even then be able to drink from the kois of Birkas Hamazon because it also has to do with the soda. However, only when you always bench on a kois. But if you're regularly, if you're often bench without a kois, and after all, and then most of us do, then you wouldn't be able to drink that kois of Birkas Hamazon before Abdullah. Instead, you would have to save it for after Abdullah and drink it then. I think, by the way, he doesn't mention over here, but if I remember correctly, you can't use that same cup for Abdullah either, because it's in mitzvahs chavilas chavilas. You can't use the same object for two different mitzvahs. So you'd have to, if I remember correctly, you'd have to use a different one. Okay. You also can't do malocha before Abdullah. And the Alter Rebbe adds that a Baal Nefesh shouldn't, and Havdalah for this purpose doesn't mean the full Havdalah for that, as we learned previously, it's enough to say Atachon Antonu, but a Baal Nefesh should be Machmir, not do any Malacha before the Tzibur finishes the Seder Kedusha, before the Tzibur finishes Vata Kodesh. So now, as far as women, if comes Yom Tov night, ending on Yom Tov, beginning on Motzei Shabbos, like we had this a few days ago, then they say first Baruch, well, if it's Yom Tov and Baruch Hamavdim and Kodesh, and if they have to light other candles or turn on lights or whatever, Baruch Hamavdim and Kodesh L'chol, then, and they should say, so the Alter Rebbe mentions only Baruch Hamavdim and Kodesh L'chol. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch over here gives the fullness of Hamavdim and Kodesh L'chol, Ben Elochor Shafan Yisrael Amim, Ben Yem Ashri L'Shesh Zeman Meisah, Baruch, without Hashem's name, Hamavdim and Kodesh L'chol. And then again, if it's Yom Tov, then Kodesh L'Kodesh. Here's another din, then, in that connection. If a person is going to be davening Maariv late, or a person is continuing his Suda late, and is going to daven only afterwards, so now you have another Yid, has already davened and said Atachon Antonu, you're allowed to ask that other Yid to do Malacha for you. And you're allowed to then have Hana and eat from that, even though you yourself are still, for you it's still Shabbos, and even me saying Ritzei in Birkas Hamazon, but at that point you're already allowed to tell another Yid who already finished Shabbos to do some Malacha for you.
Does it apply if it holds one day Yom Tov and then can ask him a special?
The one versus 2 days of Yom Tov is a whole other matter. That's a whole different set of dinim, and we're not getting into that right now. Here we're talking about that we're both in the same place and Shabbos ends for us at the same time, but I'm keeping Shabbos later because I'm still eating Shalosh Shodes, so I'm going to be davening Maariv later, and you've already finished. Yeah.